But we're on now. Can you tell the difference?
I can.
You can?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, like, the tone is different? The vibe tone, is different?
The vibe is different.
So we're different people.
We're different people.
Which is really appropriate in this particular case.
It is very appropriate.
Would you introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Lawrence Rothman, musician, songwriter, singer.
And we're doing this among enough cool gear for the next 50,000 years.
Yeah. Pretty much.
I mean, how long ago did you start acquiring all of this?
It's been like, I want to say 10 to 12 years. Various pieces have, like, you know, interesting histories, like the 8-track tape machine with Steve Albini's that he recorded a lot of his 80s and early 90s records on at his studio in Chicago.
Wow.
Yeah, and then the... That 24-track machine was owned by Willie Nelson. It was in his tour bus at one point. And then the Neve was owned by the band.
But that's kind of like the number one reason that there's no reason to leave.
Yeah, no, there isn't.
Even though you're surrounded by all of this.
Yeah.
You know, all of these iconic, you know, I mean, we just go down to Sunset and we're in Pet Sounds land.
Exactly. It's interesting. I've gone to all those studios and recorded a lot in those studios. My last record I did at East West was like, which is
6,000 Sunset. I was there about a month ago because of
that. Yeah, and they're all great studios, but there's something about the comfort of just being in your own home, having the luxury to tweak until you're happy.
And you know what you're going to get.
Yeah, you know what you're going to get. You can redo something if you don't like it.
Obviously, we're here to talk about a soundtrack. What do you want to tell me about you that relates to the fact that we're sitting here talking about this really interesting 90s reflection, you know, in a horror film? I mean, growing up, I mean, you know where I'm going here?
Yeah, I do. Well, so the 90s is when I was young and music, it was the first time I was being exposed to music that, you know, sort of shaped my psyche of taste and what chords I make on the guitar or on the piano. MTV was mainlined into my living room like 24/7. Like, my parents would just let us just watch MTV over and over again. So
you were just at the edge where MTV
was cool.
Good.
Yeah, it was cool. Good. You had the Buzz Bin and
you were just there.
Bunch of cool alternative rock shows, and you could see like Mudhoney and Nirvana and Hole and you know, all these, just all the great, you know, grunge or indie or whatever you want to call them bands of the day. You could see their videos. Like, I saw every Sonic Youth video I could possibly, you know, imagine, like from like midnight to like 5 a.m. on a Saturday night, you know. So a lot of that music really shaped me on what direction I wanted to go musically, because I started off, my parents got me jazz guitar lessons, and I did jazz for a while, which I love now. But at the time when
you're,
I was young,
like,
I was bored.
You're kind of like, I'm not hip, I'm not cool.
I was bored, you know. So I quickly gave that up after like a couple of years and got into the rock stuff. And St. Louis is very remote as far as where we lived. There was just nothing there. So you just sat in your basement and just played music and recorded music, and that's just how you retreated after being at your public school all day long.
90s to 2000s to 2010s to 2020s. The 90s were decades ago.
They were.
Like,
they were
really decades ago.
Yeah, they
ago.
Were.
Like,
K-Rock still plays all their music like it's as if it's today.
The 90s are old school.
Yeah,
so,
old.
So what do you take away from the 90s that you actually remember that's top of mind?
I liked the mix of that decade, though. You talk about grunge or whatever, it was very vast musically. You know, at the top of the decade, you had grunge, which was very
grunge
short.
Grunge disappeared
like,
in
like, 2 years.
Yeah, like,
you know,
like,
and then you
off.
Had the pop punk stuff of Green Day and Blink-182, which I really loved at the time. And then that morphed into, you know, and then you also had this very cool goth industrial music with Marilyn Manson and Ministry and Nine Inch Nails. And then it got morphed into, you know, later in the decade with the, you know, rap, rock.
I was just going to say, and hip hop suddenly came into the mix there.
So
too.
It's like you really had an insane taste of all these genres all mixing together, and trip hop as well from the UK.
So had you read The Turn of the Screw?
Yeah. Yeah, was it required reading actually growing up?
Was it really?
Yeah, in the I think it was 9th or 10th grade, and I remember when I read it, I enjoyed it, but was a little bit weirded out by it at the time. I didn't fully. I was probably 15. I just didn't fully grasp the concepts that were sort of laced and going on inside of that story. Is a little bit outside of my range at the time, so I was freaked out, but enjoyed it at the same time. If that makes sense.
Right. So let's move forward fast.
Yeah.
So you've obviously collaborated with Florence quite a bit on things.
Yeah.
You know, over the years.
Yeah.
So where was that exact moment that she came to you? You know, were you sitting over a cup of coffee and she goes, "Oh, by the way,
the soundtrack."
Yeah, I want you know, I'm doing this movie. And,
well, yeah, it was interesting. Her Turn of the Screw adaptation is set in the 90s.
Right.
So she wanted original music that was not, you know, music from the 90s, like taking a Smashing Pumpkins song or a Hole song. She wanted unique music that was for the film so that when you watch the film and a song came on, it didn't trigger a memory that you might have had when you were 10 or 12 or 20 with a song that you've heard, so that it created a world that was unique to her turning film.
And that's a very specific ask, because what happens on a majority, I mean, it's The Sopranos or Six Feet Under,
right,
is they'll put in a few things to be key tracks so they're radio friendly.
Yeah.
So it does it. You had read the book. What did she hand you? Was there a script yet?
Yeah, well, she handed me the script. Also, I saw like an early cut of the film when it had no music in it.
So she had gone that far already.
Yeah, it was like a very, very, it was Mike. I think they had shot and they were like a month into their edit. And originally she wanted me to find music from the era that maybe had never come out, like a unreleased.
Yeah, that's
song.
Isn't that the usual ask?
Yeah,
that is the usual ask, and music supervisors, that tends to be their thing. Yeah. Is they're constantly calling labels and particularly publishers and saying, "Where's that song?
Yeah, that never came out
from 1986 that somehow got lopped off the record."
Which there's lots of. I thought like there was a slew of great current artists that I love and that Floria loves, that their sound, their DNA of their music kind of has like a 90s flavor to it. Yeah, so I was like, why don't we approach some of these newer, more current artists with the idea of you know, doing, do they have a song, you know, or do a song? So it was very loose at the beginning. And the thing that sort of jet-setted the whole scenario was, because originally it was just not, it was like three songs we were going to do, was I had a song called Mother, that was a
that
song
you had
that
written,
had written.
That
yeah.
you had written already.
Yeah, I had written already, and I showed it to Floria. I was like, you know, if somebody like Courtney Love had sung this, or, you know,
it would
Liz Phair, it would be amazing. And so we went to Courtney, and Courtney agreed to do it right off the bat, which was amazing.
Yeah.
And then that kind of just set the tone and the idea. And
it's a great, I mean, and not that it's a bad thing, but boy, what a great calling card to go to anybody else and say, by the way, you will be accompanying Miss Love on this.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it was sort of, you know, my biggest influence growing up was Hole. And so when I wrote the song Mother, it wasn't even for the Turning soundtrack. I was listening to a lot of Hole at the time.
It was in your DNA.
Yeah, it's in my DNA, yeah.
As you were starting to think about this and the artist, did you think about threads in terms of sound and instrumentation and things that would make, what was cohesive to you?
Well, yeah, the sort of the ground rule of the whole scenario was like, we're going to keep this 90s equipment. So it's
oh, really?
Yeah, we did not a single thing until the very end, the final mix.
Right.
Pro Tools to just so it's stored.
So
but we
you,
mixed
did you
it
record
all
at analog?
Yeah, we recorded all analog. We mixed it all analog. So if you have a more electronic song on the 90s, I mean, of the 90s, they, you know, they would be on analog or ADATs or whatever at the time. And so there's a few electronic tracks on the soundtrack, and that we still stay true to the tape. And the, and that was, you know, like the electronic tracks in the soundtrack are a nod to like what was going on in the UK with trip hop and things like that. And then with the guitar based music, we just kept it even like down to like, the equipment, like nothing can be past, you know, 1999 as far as a guitar, an amp. Yeah, I kind of just went for it.
The idea of giving each song a role versus looking at the footage and saying, ah, that song will go there.
Right.
So talk to me about that.
Well, yeah, so, you know, there was 19 songs. The project stemmed from an earlier project that I was doing for my label. I have a label called Crow Records. And we were actually putting together a compilation album of a bunch of different artists. So that's the idea kind of merged with the soundtrack. And so when we presented songs to Floria, there was a lot of songs. There was a good bucket of songs for her to choose from. And so we left it to her to place where she wanted them in the film.
Right, right.
None of them were like tweaked for a scene or anything like
that.
Sure. Because some of them were written outside of, or majority, I would say, were written outside of even the existence of the movie.
Right.
So,
how did you know who was right and who to approach?
It was pretty much instinctual in the sense of, like, when I listen to Soccer Mommy, I love her music, right? It also, to me, has the DNA of a 90s sort of influence in it, regardless if it's intentional or not. And so when we made the list, we wanted to approach people where, like, the sonicness of something that was 90s throwback would come natural, that wasn't forced, you know?
Right. You didn't have to get them in and say, be like this.
Be like this.
They were already like this.
They're already
this.
There. Other than, like, let's not use a bunch of synthesizers or stuff that's modern on the
right.
song. You know?
Right.
On a, you know, like, what would they have done in the 90s? They wouldn't have used a Moog for the bass, you know, on a rock song. So other than that, it was sort of just how they would approach the song anyways. So that's why we chose sort of the artist that we chose, because we didn't want to force it upon somebody to, like, sound like something that they don't sound like naturally.
So how do you explain to people why this all worked and why it's getting so much attention?
Well, I think rock, just the term rock, is almost like a spirit. You know, I think even in hip hop music, some of it strikes me as rock, you know, even though it's genred as hip hop. And when you go back to this idea of, like, no genre, I completely agree with you, because, you know, I see Travis Scott perform, and to me, that's just like rock and roll music. And inside of the hip hop world, they've done the best job of merging all the different sounds into whatever. Like, they have no qualms about putting a country thing with, like, a jazz fusion thing.
How do you approach your point of view of all the things you are and all the artists you work with and try to make it make sense?
I mean, I grew up, like we were talking earlier, in St. Louis, where, like, and I'm Jewish as well. You know, so there wasn't a lot of Jewish people, and there wasn't a lot of, you know, and early in life, I identified myself as, like, I'm gender fluid, and my mom respected that. There wasn't a name for it at the time, but sure. But we both, like, we were on the same page. Like, this is how I feel. This is who I am. You know, I don't need to go see a shrink. I don't, you know, there was none of the sort of typical St. Louis things where you'd have been sent to a shrink.
Even back then, shrinks would be like
pill pop. Yeah, they would have been confused. But my mom, you know, my mom was super, super creative person, super artistic person, had a lot of friends who, you know, in Chicago growing up, that, you know, were outside of, you know, what was ever the quote unquote normal society. You know, my dad, on the other hand, was a little bit not as welcoming.
Let's go to Finn.
Mm-hmm. So in the film, Finn is a musical kid. He, like, retreats to his bedroom to get, like, his, you know, his angst out. And so the idea of there being a song by Finn was an idea that was kind of always there. You know, we were moving along with our soundtrack, didn't really you know, approach him or go into that with, but the idea was out there. And then in August or something, right around the time the film was about to be locked, he had sent through some demos of his new band to Floria just to listen to. And I was with her, and I heard it, and I was like, what is this? And then she's like, oh, this is Finn's new group. I was like, well, we got to, you know, make sure that we get him on the soundtrack. And so I instantly loved it. Like, when I heard it, I didn't know it was Finn. You know, I just, like, it just sounded cool to me, you know.
Bonus points.
Yeah. And so then he came by with his musical partner, Malcolm. It's the two of them are the band, are the Aubreys. And, I mean, they were just crazy musicians. They played everything themselves, you know, and together. They play the guitar and the bass and the, or the guitar and the drums, and then they overdubbed on top of themselves, and they were super quick. And so I was highly impressed. Like, you know, here's this kid, he's a great actor and he's a great musician. You know, it's rare.
Yes, it is. And Kim, there's a free spirit.
So Kim, when I was growing up, I'd look at Sonic Youth lyrics as like almost like they're like beat poetry or something, you know. And I always just dug the lyrics as like just reading, regardless of how much I like the music. So I worked with Kim on a song of mine in 2016 called Designer Babies, where I had this song written. It was pretty much done. And then she came by the studio to sing on it, and it morphed. She just started throwing all of her poetry lyric across my song. And then we actually ended up switching the song a lot as a result of it. And that was my introduction to understanding, like, wow, so Kim is almost like a free form spoken word poet on the mic. And I don't know where a lot of the lyrics come from, because they're not written down. So they're all one after another coming in her head. So when on the soundtrack, it was the same way. Justin Raisin, who's a collaborator of mine, who produced that song, the Kim song with us, he like would put up a beat of something that he knows she would like, and then she just freeforms over it, you know, and then we build the song around her lyrical freeform.
You have all these artists surrounding you. How did you think about your contributions to the soundtrack?
I mean, there was a lot of songs that I had written fully before the artists came. And so it was just a matter of like, which ones do I want to like be as I'm this the vocalist, or I'm doing the duet with somebody. I really wanted to, with my tracks, I had gotten to this mode where I did the song for Cherry Glazer called Womb, and she came by and sang it. And I got in this mode where I didn't actually want to sing a full song. I wanted it to be a duet. I love this Mazzy Star, Jesus and Mary Chain song from the 90s. And that was sort of the template for my tracks. And so Pale Waves, who I love, when I wrote the song, I was thinking of them as the duet at the time. And then it worked.
But normally I have the artist build a musical sandwich, but here we're dealing with a soundtrack. Mm-hmm. So I want to kind of give you this is yours. You can do whatever you want. Mm-hmm.